It's 1 o'clock. President Representative Seaton, Wilson, Guttenberg, Olson, Newman, Co-Chair Newman, and Co-Chair Johnson. Today we have before us House Bill 229. It's good to be Speaker, isn't it? Get another bill up. Representative Chenault, would you like to join us at the table?
You would like me to, Mr. Chairman?
I would. And before we get started, we have a CS that I would like to adopt, and then you can kind of look at. We'll find out. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move CS for House Bill number 229, version / E, bullet dated 2/18/10, for committee discussion.
And I'll object so that we can kind of understand what the differences are. Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 229 is an act that amends and extends the Exploration and Development Incentive Credit. It was originally enacted in the 23rd Legislature in 2003. It was House Bill 61. This tax credit continues to apply underneath the Alaska Net Income Tax Act for operators, working interest owners directly engaged in the exploration for development of natural gas primary in the Cook Inlet area. To more strongly encourage companies to invest additional credit in exploring for and developing new gas reserves, this legislation makes the following changes to the current law. By increasing the amount of tax credit from 10% to 25% of the amount of qualified capital investment and qualified service spending, it removes the 50% limitation on the amount of credits that can apply in a single year, increasing the time value of money for the credits, Mr. Chairman. It removes the successful efforts requirement that disallows credit for wells that are drilled with all the same costs but end up being non-productive. It also clarifies that the credits can be taken on a current tax year, on a timely filed tax return, or on a timely filed tax return for the year immediately following the year the qualified capital investment is made. Clarifies that the credits can be applied to a gas reserve regardless of whether or not there's been previous gas production in the area. It also clarifies that the credits do not apply to the North Slope gas that is brought to South Central. And it extends the sunset date of the investment tax credit from January 1, 2013 to January 1, 2020. Well, that's pretty basically, Mr. Chairman, what it does. I think that we know that the annual natural gas production and supply in the Cook Inlet area have been declining for a number of years. And during that same time, demand has been increasing steadily. Therefore, a sharp increase in drilling to find new reserves is drastically needed. The original investment tax credit enacted in 2003, while modestly successful in stimulating new drilling, needs to be made much more effective incentive to developers to increase capital spending in a large manner. And we believe that these changes will go a long way in achieving those goals, Mr. Chairman.
Are there questions of the bill sponsor? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Speaker. I understand that this is needed to create more exploration. Don't have a problem with that at all, because it's needed, it's obvious. Now, however, we're giving them credit for all kinds of things, so that if they do find a big gas load then, once that's found and we've already given them all the credit, why is it absolutely necessary that they continue getting all the breaks once they find it? I mean, once they find it, that's wonderful. That's what we want. But we're extending that the sunset date from 2013 to 2020, and that's a long time. And if our reasoning is because we want exploration. We want them to find it. But once they find it, and we've already given them all these breaks, then why can't we kind of think about not giving away the whole thing?
Representative Chenault?
Representative Wilson, through the chair. Most of us know that the Cook Inlet has been fairly heavily drilled.
Yeah.
In the last 40, and I've got to think about it now, last 50 years, almost 60 years, I guess. And, you know, I don't believe that there's any big pockets of gas out there. Most of the gas that's going to be found in the Cook Inlet are going to be smaller pockets of gas, harder gas to find, more lateral drilling to get to some of those gas pockets, and certainly, you know, some may require jackup rigs and other drilling apparatus to be able to find those. The gas is going to be expensive to find. Anytime you drill a hole, I don't remember the percentages, but they drill a lot more dry holes than they certainly do holes that actually produce gas. And so to think, for me to think that we're going to go find a big field out there is pretty hard for me to believe at this point in time. Certainly, you know, this is intended to go out and look at areas that haven't been drilled, and also to look at the newer technology to drill into some of the formations that that we currently draw gas from. I'm not real technical on the aspects of the drilling. We have some people here that will testify, and they surely can answer your questions on why it's needed.
Representative Wilson?
Just to follow up, and I totally agree that probably, I guess, does this, how much does this bill give credit for? In other words, when they're drilling and it's costing a lot of money and everything, we're going to give them credits for most of that, aren't we?
We're going to give them, Representative Wilson, through the chair, we changed the tax credit from a 10% tax credit to a 25% tax credit. And the people that we have here will be able to maybe give you some insight into what the cost of actually drilling a well are, and you know what this means to them as they try to get the investment that's needed from their corporate managers to continue to drill in the Cook Inlet Basin to keep gas flowing.
Okay. Representative Wilson, also online we have with Marathon Oil. I'm going to butcher this name. Doug Therwacker. Robin Wilson with the Tax Division, Kevin Banks with DNR, and Marcia Davis with the Department of Revenue to answer any questions you might have. And also Representative Tuck is online. And Representative Tuck, if you need to jump in, you're going to have to yell pretty loud so that you can get my attention.
Okay, thank you very much. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, but I don't want to hear from you. Thank you, Representative Tuck. Any additional questions, Representative Seed? I'm sorry, Chris. Just had to do it.
Oh, no, anytime.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my question revolves around other testimony that we've had from the oil and gas companies over time, and that has been that they haven't explored and haven't drilled because gas has been held down at such a price by RCA that it's not profitable for them to produce it. And so, I mean, I'm having some difficulty because the testimony we've received is they don't explore for gas because there's no good gas market, and the gas that they've found explored for recently has just been in conjunction with exploring for oil, which was more profitable, such as Cosmopolitan and the offshore drilling there. And other than Armstrong at Anchor Point, that people haven't been having contracts renewed at a high enough price that they felt that they could justify the expenditures. Can you kind of relate that aspect to this credit here?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, you know, I could probably talk about that issue. It may be a better issue to hear from the actual producers that are drilling in Cook Inlet as to what those tax credit means and what that does to the gas supply.
And we do have members of those people in those exploration companies here to testify. So, Representative Seaton, follow up.
Thank you. And any of these questions that are that I have, I'm putting on the table so that they can answer them if you think that they're more appropriate. Within the bill here, this, as I am trying to read it here, this tax credit would be written off against corporate tax instead of production tax. Is that correct?
Capital investment, yeah. Qualified services.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton.
So on page two of the bill, where we're talking about the qualified services in the state for any gas reserve. So this is, I'm not sure what the qualified services are because it doesn't appear to be.
Representative Seaton, would you identify a line so that we can?
Yeah, page 5 and 6. Page 2.
Okay. Line.
Subsection, new subsection B.
That's just the okay. That'd be line 4.
Starting in line 4 through lines 9. Yes.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what I'm trying to do is figure out what the qualified services are, because this seems to be much more than drilling a well. It seems like it's any expenditure that these companies make on any gas reserve is going to qualify for. This is 10%, but I think it's going. Oh yes, going up 25%. And so, am I correct in that understanding,
Mr. Representative Seaton, through the chair? Yes.
And before we go on, Representative Kawasaki and Representative Edgman have joined us. Follow up, Representative Seaton. How are you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess my question has been is, you know, we have a zero production tax on oil and a extremely low tax rate for the Cook Inlet sedimentary basin on gas. So basically, we're trying to stimulate investment with no tax on oil or almost no tax on gas, and we've got exploration tax credits that apply in addition to these, I believe. And now absorbing 25% of any service with this, it seems like we're really making a subsidy investment in the companies instead of trying to stimulate a certain behavior. And so I'm trying to figure out how all these interrelate. And so if that's not too broad a question, Mr. Chair.
Well, I don't know how. Representative Seaton, through the chair, it is our intention to try to incentivize more drilling. Currently, the tax credit system we have, it does help, but you know, we don't have the drilling that's going on in Cook Inlet, and you stated one of the reasons that it may be. Others will state that it's, you know, from some of the corporations will state it's hard to get capital investment dollars when they're competing in certainly it's a closed market, but whenever they're competing worldwide for money to drill the basin, and it's an expensive basin to drill in, you know, we think that it's the way to go as far as trying to incentivize them to continue their drilling to make sure that that we don't run out of gas. You know, RCA and the gas prices certainly have things to do with the price of the market and some of the investments, but the cost of doing some of this drilling is pretty high, and they're taking a rather large chance at finding something small, with the risk of investment that they have. Certainly, they can explain that to you better than I can.
And we do have, once again, we do have people that are going to testify on that. Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you. And as far as Representative Seaton's question about qualified, I'll get when if Marcia Davis is going to testify, I think.
She's here for questions, but I certainly anticipate she would answer that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Chenault, on the HB 61, the last, on page 6 of it, I'm sorry, 5, it called for a report on exploration and the development tax credit no later than 2008.
Representative Guttenberger, did you say HB 66?
HB 61, the original bill.
Oh, the original bill, okay.
The original bill, it's part of the packet, it's the very last page if yours is mine, but... The original bill called for a report on the effect. Did that report ever get done? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, I don't know if it got done or not. I haven't seen it personally.
Okay.
I would suggest that that's a question for the administration.
Okay. I was just wondering if that was the impetus of the increased credit. From 10% to 25%, but I'll wait till they get online, Mr. Chair.
After Marcia Davis is online now, if you'd like to ask her that question, like I said, she is not scheduled to testify.
Sure.
So unless we prompt her with a question, she will probably be silent.
We could do it now, or he's...
Let's go ahead and ask it
okay.
now. Marcia, are you
yes,
there?
This is Marcia.
Great. Did you understand the question, or did you hear the question?
I'm not sure I understood the question. If you could just repeat it, Representative Guttenberg, through the chair.
Thank you. On the original House Bill 61, which this bill is amending, it called mm-hmm. for a report on effects of gas exploration and development tax credit. And if I can read it to you just briefly, no later than November 30th, 2008, Department of Revenue shall prepare and publish a report for the effects of this. And it lists a set of criteria that the report is supposed to address. Did the administration ever do this report? Do you know?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, I believe we have, and I will have to get my hands on it and make it available to you. I did hear an inquiry about that before this session started, so I was fairly certain that it has been done.
If I can.
And so we will make a point to get it distributed to the chair.
Okay. And thank you, Mr. Chair. To continue, Marcia, the bill talks about qualified services, qualified costs, and capital investments. What are things that qualify for this investment?
Well, in terms of looking, the bill itself doesn't purport to modify qualified services, so it would stand unmodified. Per this bill, and that right now, qualified services, according to the statute, would be expenditures for labor, seismic, and other services that are directly applicable to the qualified investment, which this bill is talking about. And so the only thing that puzzles me is it has a subsection that says does not include lease operating expenditures. And so clearly what should be covered would be the labor services involved with leasing and operating a drill rig, building a lot of the infrastructure that's listed, which would be the roads, the docks, the port facilities, bringing in and operating maintenance equipment and facilities, maintenance camps, et cetera. With that said, one of the things, I don't see a definition for what is a lease operating expenditure, but I might defer to Robin Wilson, who's on the phone, just to see if we've interpreted that under the existing law, since that's not being changed. Robin, are you online?
We have her online, but maybe she's not listening. Robin, are you online?
Yes, I am. For the record, this is Robin Wilson with the Tax Division. I'm the Corporate Income Tax Manager. And in answer to Marcia's question, I don't believe that has had occasion to be interpreted yet by Department of Revenue.
Representative or Chairman Chenault, the reason I asked the question is lease operating expenses generally would be those types of expenses that are charged back to owners and are what are your ordinary and typical. However, because this particular provision is targeted, this credit is targeted at developments, exploration and development of leases that up to this point have not been productive of gas. In other words, this is striking at new development. Then presumably it's basically targeting, if you imagine an oil field being developed, it happens in phases. You first get the lease, and maybe even before you get the lease, you might have a permit to conduct seismic. But you do your seismic, and that involves labor and could involve some qualified capital expenditure. Those should be covered. Then the next phase is if through your seismic you discover prospects, you go through your exploration phase, and that's going to entail some exploratory wells. And again, you're in a phase where you are exploring all of the labor associated with operating the rigs, operating, the waste disposal and transport where you may not have roads in place would get covered, ice roads, for instance, et cetera. Then once you've explored and you've found something, you go into a development phase. And during the course of development phase, that's your major construction phase where you'll be building the gathering centers, compressors, et cetera, to essentially be able to operate the facility. But you're in a development phase. You have not yet produced oil or gas for sale. So again, labor and qualified expenditures in the buildup would be what would be targeted by this. I believe the purpose of the operating expenses is once you've passed through seismic, exploration, and development, you are now poised to begin to produce and sell. At that juncture, your labor and your capital investments that involve your maintenance, et cetera, should fall into what would be typically called operating expenses. It means now you're selling and producing, and those become operating expenses, and I believe that's what this exclusion is intended to cover. So I hope that answers your question, Representative Gutenberg.
Yes, thank you. And I have a follow-up.
Okay, follow-up, Person Gutenberg.
Thank you. You mentioned, Marcia, you mentioned the part of the qualified expenses are seismic work. Who owns do we have access to the seismic work once a well is, let's say, abandoned or moved on or proprietary information?
I'll defer to Kevin Banks, who's on the phone, because to the extent these are state oil and gas leases, I'm confident that the state requires the sharing of the seismic information with them as a consequence of issuing the permits. Is that correct, Kevin?
Yes.
Kevin, if you'd identify yourself, please.
Will do. This is Kevin Banks, the director of the Division of Oil and Gas at DNR. Representative Gutenberg, through the chair, Marcia is correct that when seismic is shot over state land, whether it is under lease or not, the state acquires the seismic data. If it's shot over private land or over federal land, we do not get the seismic information.
Thank you.
Representative Seat?
Thank you.
Representative Gutenberg, through the chair, this is Marcia Davis. One of the issues, as you asked that question about seismic and the acquisition of data, under the production tax side of our law, we have an exploration incentive credit that's built into the production tax. Production tax is owed on all land within the state boundaries, so that would be state leased lands, private lands, even federal MPRA lands that are there. One of the consequences of the state issuing a credit under the production tax is that if a credit is taken there, the seismic information is in fact shared with the state of Alaska as part of the quid pro quo of getting the credit. That would not be the structure under this bill. So to the extent seismic labor and qualified investments receive the corporate income tax credit, there is not currently a requirement that data be shared with the state.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And back to the question with Marcia. I presume she has the bill.
Yes, I do.
And on page 2, lines 6, 7, and 8, that's saying for any gas reserve of the taxpayer or for each year that the qualified costs are incurred for a gas reserve for which the taxpayer previously elected to claim a credit. So if someone previously claimed a credit, does that mean that they can get a credit for the production and operating expenses?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on the wrong page there. Okay, 25% for qualified during each tax year for which a credit is allowable. It still has to be a qualified service.
Marcia, I'm still not sure you're on the right place. Would you restate your question?
Yes, page 2, lines 6 through 9.
Of the CS.
Marcia, do you have the CS?
I apologize. I did not get the CS. I had downloaded this morning, and all that was online was the A version. I apologize. So just tell me what section number you're talking about.
It is section, it's 4320-043. That's section 1 of the bill, and this is the new subsection B, on the first subsection B.
Okay.
Martian, I think we have that coming to you. We're faxing that to your office.
Okay.
So you'll have it quickly.
Terrific. Actually, if there's a way for them, let me give you the fax number, because it's in Anchorage, and that is 276-3338.
Okay, we're going to hold on to this question until you get the CS, Representative Seaton.
Okay. That's okay. Thank you very much.
I'd like for everyone, and if we could, Rex, never mind. I'd like to get that to everyone who may not have it.
That would be me too, Mr. Chairman. Kevin Banks here.
Kevin, and Robin, do you have a copy of it as well? Robin Wilson with the Tax Division.
No, sir, I do not. May I give you a fax number?
You may.
269-6644.
And you know you're going to get faxes from strange places now.
And that's quite all right. And for Division of Oil and Gas, 269-8938.
Excellent. We'll get those to you right as soon as we can, and we'll come back for questions later. With that, any other questions, Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess the question that I'd ask earlier to the sponsor was so that we could get a response on how the interaction of all of the exploration tax credit in Cook Inlet and this tax credit on corporate taxes and all the interacting pieces fit in. So if they've got that as a chart or a, you know, just so we can stack them up and see.
When you say they, I think you're probably not talking about the sponsor.
No, I had asked the sponsor, and he wanted to defer it to, I believe, Marcia Davis, probably.
Okay. Marcia scurrying to her fax machine, I'm sure.
Yes.
Marcia, go ahead. Do you understand that?
Unfortunately, I have not received that inquiry. So essentially what I believe Representative Seaton is asking for is to ensure he understands how this specific, what is the gas exploration and development tax credit under 4320043, interfaces with the exploration incentive credit. Is that correct, Representative Seaton?
Yes, and what in other credits or deductions we allow.
Right, and I think what I'd like to do is huddle with Robin, because we actually have at least two other bills in the legislature right now proposing additional Cook Inlet targeted tax credits against the corporate income tax, and I think most of those either involve gas storage or some other element. So I would like to give you a thorough answer that looks at all of the pieces and how these would interface. On first blush, Representative Seaton, what this particular bill does is it basically makes its credit dominant. It's basically saying this credit shall be applied before any other credits in this chapter. There may be similar language in some of the other credits, but to the extent that that holds, because this particular credit is removing the 50% cap, but basically allowing this credit to go fully against the corporate income tax first and foremost, then presumably if the credits exceeded the corporate income tax, there would be no interaction with any other corporate income tax credit. It would fully take care of the corporate income tax. To the extent that there's any remaining corporate income tax liability or obligation, then presumably the other corporate income tax credits, be they exploration or be they some other, whether they're gas storage or something else, the corporate income tax payer would then drop down the list of the next credit available and apply the amount of their credit against those income tax. Now, presumably, the expenditure can only be used once, and that's what we would want to verify, and I'd verify with Robin Wilson that one particular expenditure, if it gets used and offset against corporate income tax under this bill, could not then be also used and applied under, say, the exploration tax credit if the particular expenditure qualified under both. And we'll verify that and come back to you with an answer.
Thank you. And just for the record, this document is available on BASIS under meeting documents, so you can pull it up on BASIS. You should have it very quickly anyway.
Representative,
did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Marcia, I have another question, and I know that this is pretty vague, and it would be very difficult for you to answer this, but what are the probabilities of all of these different credits and different allowances that we're trying to pull together to produce more exploration? Is the probability that they wouldn't have to pay any taxes at all, is that a good probability or is it not? I guess that's what I want to know, because I just want to know the answer to that.
Well, Representative Wilson, through the chair, obviously, each individual taxpayer's particular standing and where they're at in the process is confidential, but one could look at what I'll call hypothetical types of taxpayers. To the extent a taxpayer in Cook Inlet is a smaller company that really is targeting itself at exploration plays, by and large, they are not going to have a lot of income. So in terms of if they don't have a lot of ongoing producing acreage elsewhere in the state, they may not have a significant amount of corporate income tax, and so the amount of expenditures that they incur on the front end associated with seismic exploration and development would be expected to, dwarf or swamp their corporate income tax liability. However, those individuals are not folks that we are currently using or have as contributing to the general funds through their corporate income tax. They're relatively new players. To the extent there is ongoing development through large companies that have ongoing production, you probably could see some dampening of the corporate income tax associated with the expansion of this, but again, the state would be receiving as the consideration for that loss some sense that there would be future income coming into the state in the form of increased production and future corporate income tax and a future production tax and royalties and jobs, et cetera, that come from that increased economic activity. To the extent there's a producer that's doing stuff in Cook Inlet that has very active or large holdings elsewhere in the state, the amount of expenditures that you would see here receiving credits for corporate income tax may not dampen significantly the overall income or in a material way their income tax paid because of activities elsewhere in the state. So I guess it depends on the entity and who's likely to benefit and target this. But I would say that you'll have some that wipe out their corporate income tax entirely, and you'll have some that might dampen it slightly. It would range that sort of range.
Representative Wilson.
Follow-up, Marcia. Because the whole reason for the bill is to increase exploration, do you feel that this is enough of a, by the time we get this and the other bills all pulled together, that it is enough of an incentive for companies that aren't doing anything now to maybe go down and take another look?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, it certainly doesn't hurt, but again, I think as one of the legislators mentioned earlier, there are several factors that affect investment. This goes as far as it can go relative to making sure that corporate income tax is not a disincentive and that it can provide some financial incentive to a company to incur costs and move forward. To the extent the marketplace or market pricing is impacts those choices, this bill really cannot, you know, affect that factor.
Okay, thank you.
And Marcia, if we ever figure out how to do that, that bill will be in the hopper very quickly as well.
You bet.
Any other questions of the sponsor before we move on to some testimony? Representative Chenault, you appear to be off the hook for a bit.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Not
of the bill sponsor particularly, unless he wants to answer. But I just need a quick refresher on corporate income tax and what percentage is that is. And I remember it being single digit or 10 or 12% or something like that. Can we get somebody to speak to that?
Yeah, we have Robin Wilson with the tax division online, so she's probably the person to answer that. Robin, did you hear that question?
Yes, and I believe, as I understood the question to be, the rates of corporate income tax, is that on, I'm sorry, was that the basis of the question?
That's an affirmative.
Okay. Through the chair, the top marginal income tax rate is 9.4%. And that is of, just to sort of refresh everyone's memory, we calculate the taxable income based on a combined basis. So it is the whole corporate group. The first question is what amount of activity happens in Alaska versus everywhere else. So in effect, we're taxing a slice of the pie. And so of that slice, then again, it's a graduated rate, but the top rate is 9.4%.
Does that answer?
It does. Thank you.
Okay. Carrie, would you join us? Put your name on the record and tell us why this is a good thing or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Carrie Lockhart, the production manager for Marathon Oil Company, and I do have a prepared testimony that I would like to run through very quickly and then follow up with some questions. I think I can address some of the questions that have also been already asked. So if I may.
Yeah, Ms. Lockhart, if you would, if you'd submit that in so that we could have that as part of the record in writing as well when you're done, we'd appreciate it.
Okay, excellent. Before I begin, I'd like to extend an appreciation of Marathon Oil Company for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill. By way of background, Marathon Oil Company's operations are currently focused in natural gas production operations in the Cook Inlet and Cook Inlet alone. In 2009, our average natural gas sales from Alaska from that area averaged about 87 million cubic feet per day. And we sold to essentially every market available, including the local utilities of NSTAR, Chugach Electric, Tesoro, the Department of Defense, and we also provided gas to the LNG plant that is co-owned by ConocoPhillips and Marathon Oil Company. Marathon has been in business in Alaska for over 55 years, and we remain committed to serving the natural gas needs of South Central Alaska through various contractual commitments. As you're aware, in 2003, legislation passed, and the governor signed several bills directed at providing incentives for new exploration and development activities. Marathon was particularly interested in the House Bill 61, which was intended to incentivize the exploration and development of natural gas reserves in Cook Inlet. The bill under consideration by this committee, House Bill 229, will merely strengthen the incentives provided for by the earlier bill, thus an attempt to add reliability to the natural gas system in South Central Alaska. One might ask the need to provide incentives for natural gas development in Cook Inlet. To answer this question is found by considering long-term decline in natural gas reserves and, more important, deliverability, which Cook Inlet has experienced. What must be addressed is whether there is sufficient exploration and development activity currently to address such decline in reserves and deliverability, not simply to ask whether or not there's enough gas available. At the current minimal level of Cook Inlet activity, it is unlikely that Cook Inlet reserve additions will replace annual production on an ongoing long-term basis, and that's the focus here, ongoing long-term for reliability. As such, natural gas reserves and deliverability are at risk for a continued decline in Cook Inlet, resulting in exposure to unmet utility needs in the future. The lack of Cook Inlet activity, especially on the exploration side, is an artifact of historic oversupply of natural gas, which kept prices well below the lower 48 indexed prices, creating a lack of incentive for additional drilling in this area. One of the reasons for that is because projects have to compete at the corporate level, not just Alaska projects. All projects compete at a corporate level with companies. Furthermore, the regulatory processes and deterioration of market availability have only added to the project uncertainty. The project economics and market uncertainties have made it difficult for projects to compete effectively for finite financing at the corporate level. So how will this bill help? As we're painfully aware, Alaskan project economics are not solely considered on absolute merit. They are also scrutinized on a relative scale in comparison to other worldwide opportunities in which companies such as Marathon may invest. The intent of House Bill 229 is to help level the playing field between the Alaskan projects and other investment opportunities around the world. House Bill 229 is intended to continue to provide an incentive to oil and gas production and development activities through an investment tax credit. You should have before you, which you do, the substitute for the House Bill 229 version E. Since this is the first hearing for 229, let me walk through the main points of the new legislation. This legislation does make six significant changes to the current law.
Before you go on, I'm going to remove my objection to adopting the CS. And are there any further objections to that so that we now officially have the CS in front of us? And that's my negligence for not doing that sooner, but I apologize. Go ahead, Karen.
Thank you. Section 1 increases the amount of credit from 10% to 25% of the amount of qualified capital investment and qualified services spending, as well as clarifying the credits can be applied to costs incurred for a gas reservoir for which taxpayer previously elected to claim a credit. The definition of qualified services and qualified expenditures is in the original bill that we can reference, and those definitions remain unchanged. Section 2, adjusts the dates for when qualified expenditures must be made in order to qualify for the old 10% to new 25% credits. It also changes the term, which is just more basic terminology, of reserves to wells to clarify that the wells are actually what produce the gas, not the reserves produce the gas. So that was just more of a an error on how things are classified in the oil field. Section 3 removes the 50% limitation on the amount of credits that can be applied in a single year, increasing the time value of money for the credits. Section 4 clarifies that credits do not apply to North Slope gas brought into South Central. Section 5 removes the successful efforts requirement that developers must find and deliver new resources to market to qualify for the tax. It also clarifies that the credits can be applied to a gas reserve regardless of whether or not there had been previous gas production within that entire area. And then Section 6 clarifies the credits can be taken on a current tax return, on a timely filed tax return, or on a timely filed tax return for the year immediately following the year the qualified investment was made. Section 7 adjusts the date the credits will expire from 2017 to 2024. The sunset does state 2020, but you do have some time frame at which to take those credits, thus the 24. Section 8 extends, the sunset date of the investment tax credit from 2013 to 2020. And then Section 9 gives the legislation an immediate effective date. So in summary, Marathon Oil believes that House Bill 229 is part of the equation to enhance Cook Inlet's exploration and development activities, attempting to create more certainty in the overall natural gas deliverability in Cook Inlet. And I'd like to reiterate that in order to qualify for this investment credit, the producer must make capital investments. And capital investments are going to add some level of value back to the state and entire industry and area on its own across the entire value chain. So it's just not adding value through potential finding gas. It's adding value to providing jobs and the services that go along to supporting all the activities that have to go into planning and exploring and developing natural gas in the area. And all this is necessary to meet the future overall long-term deliverability and reliability of natural gas in Cook Inlet. So with that, I would like to entertain further questions.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. On your last point, you said that capital investments must be made, and yet, as I'm seeing the bill here, it's qualified services, including labor and ongoing ongoing expenditures, and we've put on page 3 here, we've taken out reserves for which you haven't had gas delivered to reservoirs that you are currently developing and producing from. So am I misunderstanding the wording in here, and that it only talking about capital costs and not labor and seismic and everything that we had had the testimony on?
When companies make investments such as drilling a well, the labor that goes into drilling that well is tied up in the whole package of economics, which I believe would be invested. The other ongoing expenses to operate, those are defined as operating expenses within the original Bill 61, and those are excluded. The everyday continuing maintenance and everyday operations year after year after year, once these wells are drilled and production is online, those are excluded from this. So it is the one time drilling the wells, developing the product, that these investment credits would qualify, or that the investment would qualify for these credits.
Representative Seaton, follow up.
So your understanding is then that if you were putting in new collecting piping in an existing field, whether you were drilling wells or doing new exploration, that those are not qualified services under the expansion where it can be within existing production fields, and that those qualified services don't allow any, with this new language of saying that you can qualify for existing production reservoirs, that those exclude all maintenance and all operation costs and all rehab of or replacement of lines and those kinds of things. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that would be my understanding. The qualification, the investment that would qualify would have to be tied to drilling additional reserve or additional wells looking for new reserves.
Okay.
Or developing existing. It would not be for replacing a line or a piece of equipment in an existing area.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And on page 3, on section 3, the elimination of the 50% of the taxpayer liability, has that been an issue before now for Marathon?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I would like to point out that Nicole Busey from Marathon should be online, and she is the tax attorney that handles all of our taxes. And
yes. This is Nicole Busey with Marathon Oil. I can address that question.
Please do.
Okay. Nicole Busey with Marathon Oil Company. No, that has not been an issue for Marathon. However, that change would be in line, I believe, with other changes that are being proposed to other taxes related to the production tax. This is to be consistent with those changes being made to existing credits relating either production or investment tax credit.
Ms. Busey, when you say in line with changes, what are you referencing?
I believe that I'm not as familiar with the production investment tax credit, but I think that there's not this present 50% limitation, or if there is, that there's some current legislation proposed to remove that 50% limitation. I could be mistaken, though, but to answer your first question, no, this has not been an issue for Marathon.
And we cannot speak to what may or may not happen in additional legislation. So
right.
I don't know that we can answer that question, Representative Seaton, unless some other things are changed. So my understanding is this is just to maintain consistency with other bills working its way through the system. So
yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. Representative Seaton, follow up for you.
I guess I would just like to ask whether you know if any of the other companies have been hitting that limit of the 50% tax, corporate tax reduction using this, the current language?
I have no idea.
And
they have not indicated either way.
For the record, that's Nicole Busey.
Oh, yes, Nicole Busey with Marathon Oil.
Thank you. Sometimes, if you're not here, we have to keep track of that through our recording secretary, and it helps her a lot.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions for Marathon Oil?
Well, I guess I do.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. You were talking about you felt this was necessary or helpful for ongoing long-term deliverability. What are you speaking of in the term of long-term? I mean, sometimes we talk about short-term, medium-term, long-term. What do you mean for long-term deliverability in that context?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, when I talk about long-term, I mean something that's sustainable. Right now, I do not believe that the activity in Cook Inlet would sustain the current deliverability needs for more than the next couple years based on what the production declines are doing in Cook Inlet. So when I'm thinking of long-term, I'm thinking of when my kids are growing up, that they're going to have some stability in where their utility, their electricity is coming from and their natural gas for their homes. So long-term is in the future, 5, 10, 20 years. It's well beyond the 2 to 3 year time frame. That is my concern right now.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the event that this passes the rate goes up to 25%, and your interest is in getting more development online here, what do you see your successes taking these your projects back to headquarters to get them funded? Why this change of rate? I mean, sure, it increases your likelihood, but how do you see that playing out? I mean, can you talk to us about that, because that's actually what we're trying to do here.
Sure. Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, that's a good question. This is just one piece of the overall economic and risk that we look at when we decide to make capital investments. And again, the projects in Alaska have got to be competitive at the corporate level against projects in Texas and Africa and everywhere else. So I can't state that this will have wild success and all of a sudden next year we'll have 5 rigs exploring, but it will increase the odds of getting these projects funded, whether it's a development project or an exploration project. And more importantly, for companies that have yet to entertain or actually commit to investment in Alaska, it may help their projects be enabled, or may enable their projects so that they feel that they can come up here and explore and develop with rates of returns that they need in order to get the project even started. So I see this as one enabler to a package of things that have got to be reviewed as you're going through your planning process.
Thank you. And Kevin, are you online? Kevin Banks? Hello?
Mr. Chairman, I'm online.
Thank you, Kevin. And I'd like to kind of expand on that as well. What type of new producers do we have potential coming into the Cook Inlet or explorers? And can you kind of give us a handle on what you can? I know there are certain things that are confidential, but can you kind of tell us the immediate future, immediate being the next 2 years, 3 years, of the prospects of new exploration in Cook Inlet with new companies, kind of what's on the horizon?
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to do that. Of course, it's obviously a very crystal ball sort of activity, but we can, the new producers are companies that are going to be like Armstrong, which is currently developing the North Fork gas field in the lower end of the Kenai Peninsula. They will also be building a gas line to Anchor Point, and NSTAR will extend their gas pipeline down from Ninelchik to Anchor Point. That will provide some incentive, I believe, because of the available infrastructure to others that may be interested in developing resources in that particular area. And we know that there are some small gas targets. The speaker spoke of earlier that the smaller discoveries and smaller gas fields will be the wave of the future, and that is correct. These aren't going to be big, monstrous gas fields that were the character of the development that's already occurred in the Cook Inlet. There's some potential, and we're still hopeful that that Escapeda will deliver on its promise to bring in a jackup rig this year and begin drilling its prospects in the Cook Inlet on the Kitchens unit. And as far as other developments, I think one thing can be said is that of the current players that are working in the Cook Inlet, Marathon represents, I think, without a doubt, the most active developer, and they are in the process of actually pursuing opportunities that we can, you know, clearly define as exploration developments. So that sort of gives us a characteristic. I wish them all the best of luck. We'll see gas development from places that we haven't seen it before, and we've always said too that in predicting the potential for new gas discoveries, new gas supplies into the Cook Inlet would cost potentially more money. At least we can say that by offering some kind of a tax credit like this, that is reducing at least one cost faced by these new producers.
Thank you, and thank you, Kevin. I would like to also, I'd like you to restate that, or I want to make sure that I understood what you said, that this type of incentive is something that potentially is attractive to new producers, and just more clearly on the record, if you could.
I will be happy to do that, Mr. Chairman. The comments by Marcia Davis when she said it can't hurt, kind of like chicken soup, isn't it? The fact that we anticipate that new development of gas supplies in the Cook Inlet will be more costly than the historical gas supplies is a fact of life. And one of those costs represents the kinds of income taxes that the producers have to pay. This will help reduce that particular cost, and as has already been mentioned by others, the it represents solving one of the problems, and it's also I believe contributes to more potential development.
Thank you, Kevin. Do we have any potential lease sales for Cook Inlet in the near future?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we do. We have a lease sale proposed for May in the Cook Inlet.
Do you think if this legislation were enacted, it might entice people to bid on those leases?
That, again, is one of those questions that will be very hard to answer. Much of the best acreage in the Cook Inlet is already under lease. Some of the best acreage doesn't belong to the state, but belongs to the federal government. And so to the extent that my prediction would be that we, maybe someone take a look at some particular prospect and find it slightly more attractive and bid on it, whereas before they might not. But I don't think it would be a very good indicator of whether or not this particular credit is working or not.
Certainly not looking for indicators of this credit, but anything we can do to entice people to come to Alaska is kind of what I'm looking for. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kevin, early on when I was talking to the speaker about his bill and the previous bill, House Bill 61, I referenced the report that was due out in 2008 from the Department of Revenue. Have you seen that?
Mr. Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, no, I have not, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Did you have something to add to this?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple things I wanted to point out when we were just talking about whether or not this investment tax credit provision would actually attract more development. Certainly the new producers, I think there is some incentive there, but also from the existing players. Because if you think about the life cycle, or where we're at along the life cycle of these reservoirs, many of these reservoirs are very legacy, very old, and we are constantly stepping out to try to understand the aerial boundaries of these reservoirs, which this is a risk business. These are not sheer slam dunk wells, even when we're in a development mode. For instance, in 2008, we drilled a well, top structure. We fully expected to be the best well in that field, and it ended up being a dry hole. And the reason for that is these sand packages that we are targeting in many of these reservoirs are discontinuous. So you can go from one well and step over, you know, a certain amount of distance and miss the sand completely. So this investment tax credit will help hopefully enable projects that may be viewed as very borderline as we continue to explore and reach out the aerial extents of our current reservoirs.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I don't know if it's Kevin or who I need to have answer this, but I know with oil, it's only one out of six that typically is the bonanza, you know, the rest of them are dry, five out of six are dry, and I know that this is, the percentages of this drop because it's an area that's already been explored, but what is the normal drilling, is there a normal an idea like it is for oil? One in six are wet. Do you know what it is for gas?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I don't think there is one magical number. It's going to vary depending on area. If you're talking exploration, the numbers are more like 1 in 10 will be a success. So they're very, very low when it comes to exploration. When it comes to development, certainly the odds are better if you know you have a producing area. But again, since the depositional environment up here varies and is quite different than areas you may explore out, you know, in other states, it's hard to put one number on it. It could be higher, you know, it could be the 5 to 6, it could be higher. In some cases, it could be even lower.
If I may weigh in too, Mr. Chairman.
Would you identify yourself, Kevin?
Yes, Kevin Banks, the Division of Oil and Gas.
Thank you.
I would, Representative Wilson, say that we basically have drilled into most of the obvious structures in the Cook Inlet region, and now the hunt is on for much more ephemeral seismic kinds of stratigraphic traps in the Cook Inlet, which are much more difficult to see, given the technology available on geophysical surveys. So the historically in Alaska, for all wells, we saw some significant improvement in the success rate of exploration because of improvements in seismic technologies. But in the Cook Inlet, we're looking for very, very difficult to find resources. But I might also add that the legislation, as being proposed here, will also allow companies like Marathon and the other legacy companies that are developing their resources to look for gas within their own units. And this is something that I think is lost on people at times, that in fact there are, as Ms. Lockhart was saying, gas potential within existing fields that still can be developed with more drilling.
Representative Wilson, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Carrie, this follows right in with a lot of the discussion that's going on here with risk assessments that your company does along with other companies. When you're doing a risk assessment analysis on deliverable gas in Cook Inlet or oil, particularly gas, I guess, where do you place Cook Inlet, you know, as far as the rest of the state when you're looking at risk assessments? Is it a higher risk area, a lower risk area?
Representative Newman, through the chair, are you referencing just the state?
Yes.
The only activity that Marathon has is in Cook Inlet, so we have not looked beyond the Cook Inlet area.
I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman, follow-up?
Yeah.
Or new question, whichever.
Yeah. Just kind of a follow-up on that. Obviously, though, Marathon is a fairly sophisticated company. You know, you have an idea what's going on in Alaska. You decided why you chose Cook Inlet and such, but you know the industry pretty well. And I'm just trying to get a sense of risk assessments in Cook Inlet. You know, is it a risky place to try and develop and explore? You know, where is it on that chart of maybe 1 to 5?
Representative Newman, through the chair, I will state that let me perhaps compare to other projects that we look at across our portfolio and the company. Alaska is a risky place. Is it any more risky from a subsurface standard than others? Probably more risky than some, maybe less than others, when certainly like the shale plays, when the resource is contiguous across an area. There are other risks that come into play in Alaska that we don't face necessarily in other areas, such as the regulatory risk as well as the marketing risk in particular. So when you start looking at the entire package of risk, Cook Inlet and Alaska in its entirety, it's a fairly risky place to be doing business, quite honestly.
Representative Newman, follow-up?
Thank you. And then carry a different subject. The Division of Oil and Gas has looked at some of the substructures, the gas fields, the 5 different fields, you know, and covering pretty much a good area from Trading Bay North and Northern Cook Inlet, Beluga, the southern part of the inlet, to put together some information on oil and gas. Does that help assist you, or do you use that information, or do you have pretty good information already that you use or depend on, or I'm trying to analyze the value of that information.
Yeah, Representative Newman, through the chair. The are you referencing the latest report from the DNR, I assume? The information that they use is the same information that we have access to, and as a matter of fact, the producers have more access to more information since we are the owner of the information. So we probably know that area. I'm confident saying that we know that area just as well, if not better than anyone else, given that we've been operating in those areas for well over 50 years. So those reports can be very complementary to our business because they're an education tool. They're a tool to help people outside of the industry understand what the potential is out there. The one thing that the port doesn't do, which is clearly outlined in the report, is assess the economics, and that's where we have to all work together to assess what makes sense and what will work and what won't work, and that's where this bill can come into play to help enable some of those targets that are outlined in that report. Whether or not that report is 100% accurate, your guess is as good as mine, and you know, that report may not be any more accurate than my own assessment, and you know, they could be very different. We won't know until we go out there and spend money to test the concepts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Seat.
Thank you, and thank you, Gary, for coming in. And I was wondering about the deliverability versus the information that we have recently been in the news about not having an LNG export license applied for, and if LNG export does not continue, how much gas production is that going to leave available for the Cook Inlet, and how can it absorb that amount of gas?
Mm-hmm. Representative Seaton, through the chair. A couple things with the LNG plant. First of all, the LNG plant is a market outlet. So if you do have a wild discovery, it helps further the economics so you can proceed in development because you do have a home for that gas. Second of all, the LNG plant currently is very important to the overall deliverability in Cook Inlet because storage is not readily available to all players. So if the plant is not extended and it does, for whatever reason, shut down in 2011, which I will state there has been no decision on that, if it does shut down in 2011 and storage is not accessible by all, that can have some implications on wells because you have a large difference between the summer demand and the winter demand in terms of deliverability. And if you don't have a home for the gas, you're curtailing wells. And a lot of the wells in Cook Inlet we know are tied to water and do not like to be curtailed. When you curtail them, The water comes in, the gas chokes out, and then when you want that gas in the coldest of cold winter days, it's not available. So I think there is some risk in the overall system if LNG shuts down prior to having other infrastructure and things develop that can take the place of it.
Representative Gutenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Kevin Banks, if I may. Mr. Banks, how would this, you know, we're mostly focusing on Cook Inlet, but this is everything south of the 68th parallel, which is everything south of basically the Brooks Range. How would this affect Red Dog's operations or attempts to get gas locally, or the Holitna Basin, or Doyon's Nanana Basin, or its drilling in the Yukon Flats? How would this affect them? I mean, I can see that they might have a problem in the short term for not being able to apply the credits because capital investments, because it's still in exploration. But how do you see the perspective for those other entities under raising this how this would apply?
Representative Gutenberg, through the chair, this is Kevin Banks of the Division of Oil and Gas. To the extent that any of those players are paying some kind of taxes for income tax, they would get the benefit of these credits. Also, the carry forward feature of the bill, I believe, is a 5-year carry forward. If they can't use all the credits in 1 year because of their tax liability, they are able to carry forward those into a year in which maybe they are paying income, you know, or do have sufficient income tax liabilities against which to apply the credit. You've listed the most likely candidates. The Nanana Basin and the Yukon Flats are actively under exploration programs by Doyon, and there is some movement to try to develop a gas resource, I think from coal bed, in the Red Dog mine area as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
On that point, Representative Seaton?
Yes, on that point. So let's take something like Red Dog that had a corporate tax liability, and if they were developing gas for themselves to streamline their operation or to make more economical their operation, not in selling to others, then this 25% credit could be taken against their mining corporate income tax. Is that what I'm understanding?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I think I'd defer to Robin Wilson, but I think the answer is yes, they would be able to.
Ms. Wilson, did you understand the question or hear the question?
Yes, sir. And this is Robin Wilson again from Tax Division. Yes, this would be my reading of this. It would be applicable in that scenario.
Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to get a better handle of the true value of this bill. And when I look at the numbers, the ceiling of the corporate income tax being 9.4%, and you've got to qualify the expenses, and I guess it go from 10% to 25%, you're really looking at a sliver of the overall amount of capital that's at risk here, really, when you boil it down to the numbers. So I guess my question would be, is the value in this bill not so much as the increase in the percentages in taxes, but is it sort of the other provisions in the bill, like broadening the qualified capital investment definition and the amount of liabilities that you can actually write off each year? Is that more the value in this bill versus the numbers itself? Through the chair.
Representative Edmund, through the chair. Nicole, did you want to take a stab at this first before I mention anything?
I can try.
Identify yourself, please, Nicole.
Okay. Nicole Busey with Marathon Oil.
Thank you.
As I stated before, the 50% limitation would not be an issue, has not been an issue in the past for Marathon. So that's not really where the value is. I think Carrie will talk more about the increase from 10 to 25% on the qualified capital investment is is beneficial when we're evaluating our projects and the hold against those throughout the world. And it, one of the additional values is that it's the removal of the successful efforts requirement. So those are all added values for Marathon as a taxpayer.
Representative Edgman, a follow-up?
So, yes, Mr. Chairman. I think that partially answers my question that this helps, you know, whenever you go in and drill or explore, obviously you're speculating. I mean, no matter what the data tells you. So this sort of helps takes the edge off of that. But just looking at the numbers, obviously the dollar amount, just by raising the percentages and so forth, really aren't that significant. But it's maybe just the going outside of the commercial production factor in terms of qualified capital investment and being able to broaden that the liability per 1 year provisions. Those are the more important components of this bill. So,
Lockhart, did you have a
Representative Edmund through the chair? I would agree. It's the collective package that makes it attractive. Any one of these provisions taking out isn't going to destroy, and it's not going to each one of these provisions has a small amount of value, but the collective add is what can help enable the projects. I do like the provision where whether or not it's a successful well or a well that's a dry hole, that it qualifies, because we don't intentionally go out to drill dry holes. It just by default it does happen. And then on the expanding the sunset provision out, I believe Representative Wilson had asked a question about extending it to 2020. One thing we have to always remember is when we are engaging in, whether it's development activities or exploration activities, these are long lead items. And you know, exploration planning can take 4 to 5 years by the time you go through the lease, the sale, all the way through the planning and then the execution mode. It can take 4, 5, 6 years. So you're already beyond the current sunset provision. So I think extending this out also makes sense.
Mr. Kimmer, just
Mr. Edgman on that point.
One final comment would be then that, and I may get some evil looks around the table here, but I'm thinking of AGEA in terms of us sharing in the upfront risk a little bit more. What this bill would do would share would bring the state in more as a partner in terms of sharing in the upfront risk of drilling, because you may or may not strike a gas. So it sort of defrays those costs and shares a risk with the, or makes the state a bigger a partner in terms of sharing those upfront risks.
Representative Edmund through the chair, you can look at it that way. Again, in order to qualify, it's not like we're getting something just for producing. We have to make those investments. So, yes, the state would, you know, have some, I don't want to say ownership, but they would have some, not accountability, what's the right word for this?
Skin in the game.
I guess you could say that. You can look at it in that aspect.
For the record, that came from a nurse. But I'm fine with that.
It creates a win-win situation, I believe.
Yeah, and thank you, Representative Edgman. Representative Wilson?
And I'm not sure whether Carrie or Nicole, either one here, you both made the comment that this is just a smart, just a little part of the overall picture. Actually, what would be something that would be a little more incentive then? I mean, if this is kind of an incentive, but not that great, you know, what could we do that would be, yes, we'll go do it?
Representative Wilson through the chair, I don't want to downplay the importance of this because it is important, but you're right. It is a package of other things that we look at. In an ideal world, you would have unlimited market access. In an ideal world, you would have limited regulation. In an ideal world, you would have sufficient storage, and you would have infrastructure to move gas at any point in time to any place you want. And then in an ideal world, you would have these investment credits to go along with it. So it's a package deal. Is there a one, you know, the silver bullet to all of this? No. But I think that various aspects of bills that are going through legislation right now can help solve the problems in Cook Inlet. We have bills ongoing as it relates to storage. You have the investment tax credit. You have some provisions in certain bills as it relates to how the regulatory commissions and review current contracts as it relates to marketing. So I think after last year and all the discussion around the Cook Inlet decline in production and deliverability has spawned a lot of good ideas, and this is just one piece of it. But I don't want to downplay the importance, because all of those pieces are important. They need to come together.
Thank you.
And Representative Wilson, I think one of the most important things this bill does, even though the money may be small, and I'm sorry Representative Edgman has stepped out, but I think that sending a signal to industry that we are prepared to work with within the frames of framework of our laws, that sending the message that we are open for business is very important at this time in Alaska. I think we need to send more of those messages, and some people that we may have alienated in one area, maybe we can start getting some of that back. So I think it's important that we send good messages, and I think this is a good message that we want to work with you, and I think bringing this forward is a very appropriate at this time. Representative Newman, did you have something? Are you?
No, just to mention, Mr. Chair, you know, a lot of the discussions I have ongoing with some of the smaller companies in response to Representative Wilson, what she's talking about, and maybe Marathon's representative can respond if she feels need, is upfront costs that happen in Cook Inlet. You know, different bonding, different liabilities, permitting that happen, a tremendous amount of outlay by small independent companies or smaller companies that want to get in the game here, come into Cook Inlet, and they just can't afford it because of there's so many upfront costs before they can even get started, that, you know, and then the chances that they have on net back and risk-taking, risk analysis that I brought up earlier, just absorbent or very high cost just to get into the game in Cook Inlet. And I don't know how the state can get in to try and reduce those costs. I know that it's been suggested by several companies to me on ways that we can do that, and I'll continue to look at that. Is that how you feel on that, I guess, maybe, Carrie? Is that right? A lot of upfront costs?
Representative Newman, through the chair, that is correct. And I would say there's a lot of upfront cost in just about anywhere you play, but the thing that hurts Alaska alone is just the lack of competition in some of the providers. There's no doubt about it. And so that does raise your cost. And there's, you know, we can do studies where drilling a well in Alaska is significantly more costly than drilling a well, for instance, in Oklahoma. So not only is there higher costs, there are some things that we need to do on the front where there's more stringent regulations up here for good reasons, but it's something that we just have to deal with when we're drilling in very environmentally sensitive areas. It's the right thing to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And just for so that the committee knows the difficulty we're dealing with, the gas is down 14 cents today. It's at now 4.28. I'm sure that doesn't excite you, but it is something we have to deal with. And the less that gas sells for, I think the more imperative it is that we spur that development and provide these economic incentives, because just the price may not do it on its own. So I think it's important that we start looking at this kind of stuff to keep Alaska competitive and basically keep our lights on and create jobs. Any other questions? Representative Seaton?
Thank you, and I appreciate Carrie. I guess I just want to clarify some of the conversation that we've been having. We've been talking about explorers coming in. This basically, do you see that this would even affect an explorer coming in? I mean, this is a credit on corporate income tax that it only generates after you're making a profit, as I see it. It can only carry forward for 5 years. So if someone was coming in, a small new player coming in and drilling a well, the potential of them having actual profits and, you know, development, sales of gas profitably within 5 years is pretty minimal. So how do you see this bill as impacting more those that are substantial gas producers that have a corporate income tax liability in the state than those that don't have a corporate income tax liability?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that may be a question for Marcia Davis to answer. Okay. But I, you know, my guess would be it really depends. It depends on what's found, and it depends on how fast things can get on production and the payout is. So it's hard to tell, but it will help existing players. It could help players that are currently have a business in Alaska but want to expand into Cook Inlet, for example. So may not be somebody who doesn't have any presence at all whatsoever in Alaska. It could be those that are working, for instance, somewhere in the North Slope wanting to do additional work in Cook Inlet area.
Yeah, Representative Seaton, we also heard from Kevin Banks that there's someone trying to bring a jack-up rig, and if that gets here, that could potentially be of value to the other producers once that gets here. If they're not coming up, hopefully, to drill just one company, so that would, if we get one of those in the state, I think you could see more exploration, and this kind of credit, I think, would help spur that along. Any additional?
Representative Seaton, this is Marcia Davis.
Yeah, go ahead, Marcia.
Yeah, I guess there's a dimension here that I want to make sure that we capture, and that is this issue of transportation of gas. It's hinted at several places in the bill, but we probably ought to acknowledge it explicitly, and that is in Section 4 on in the CS now, I guess it's on page 3 in Section 4. While the bill expressly disallows a credit for North Slope gas development exploration, and it also expressly disallows the cost to transport gas from North Slope reserves, we've added a new section here under this that calls for it excludes delivery of Alaska North Slope natural gas to Tidewater. And so I've got a question mark on that, because as we were working on our fiscal note, we wanted to fully understand that. But what that would imply is that for Cook Inlet gas, that theoretically qualified capital expenditures do pick up transportation costs to the extent that they are included in the allowed property description, which is on page 4, and that is subsection C, Romanette 2, which picks up gathering lines, transmission lines, pumping stations, and compressor stations. So to the extent a taxpayer is an active explorer, operator of an oil and gas lease, then conceivably you've got some additional boost to Cook Inlet deliverability through the transportation aspects. What's left out, and I'm thinking specifically along the lines of some of the new entrants, and Kevin, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Armstrong was developing some gas leases and had to engage in some arrangements with one of the gas utilities to share the cost of some transmission lines to move the gas from the location of the new exploratory leases to a place where NSTAR could get hold of them and then get them to market. So there is an element to this bill that, from a Cook Inlet perspective, I think is helpful for what it sounds like the legislative intent is. The only thing I would caution is that with the way the wording was added to Section 4, where it says for the delivery of Alaska North Slope natural gas to Tidewater, oftentimes when courts look at language, they assume that everything is put in there for a specific purpose. And what's confusing is, since the first clause excludes investments associated with exploration and development of North Slope gas, and the second clause excludes any of the cost to transport gas from the North Slope, when you look at the third clause, it's unclear why you would need it if you've already excluded costs associated with transporting gas from the North Slope, regardless of where it goes. Because this would suggest that you're excluding only delivery of North Slope gas to Tidewater, which begs the question, does that mean that the cost of delivery of North Slope gas to Canada would in fact be a covered cost? And clearly, I'm pretty confident that the intent of this was not to pick up a corporate income tax waiver for the large-scale AGIA gas line. So I would just ask that we not lose sight of the positive, which is what this bill does for Cook Inlet gas transport, but we don't create a problem with this one clause in Section 4.
Okay. I'm not sure that I read that the same way, but we'll talk about that. Representative Newman, and then Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I find it would be absolutely a benefit to assist them, because to drill and develop these wells cost a tremendous amount of money. And earlier we had discussions about transportation lines around Representative Seaton's area, and where the need is there to try and help develop those infrastructure lines so that they can help reduce the cost for drilling and developing. You know, if you can't get both, and it goes back to what you said earlier, Mr. Chair, where gas now is at $4.28, and although Cook Inlet is a different tax rate than the North Slope, you know, that's $3 gas that we might be considered up there with the 25% plus progressivity. Yet we're coming up on an open season where we need to build a $30 to $40 billion pipeline and still amortize those costs with $3 gas. Could be a difficult sell, so we need to make sure that decoupling thing that we're looking at too, with the tax rates on these, they're not the same things with oil and gas. But I think Miss, a few comments there, but infrastructure is a good part of what we're doing on this bill. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Marcia, the very fact that you brought up the concern makes me want to ask you how we could, can we tweak that a little bit to make sure that we're not doing something that we're not intending here?
Well, Representative Wilson, through the chair, I believe you're close. The language that's there now, which basically says that qualified services and qualified capital investments can't be for the exploration or development of North Slope gas, is a good clause, and that sort of locks down the upstream side of North Slope gas development. The next clause that says, or that are made or incurred to transport gas from reserves located in the area of Alaska lying north of 68 degrees north latitude. What that means is, again, services or qualified expenditures that relate to transport of gas from North Slope reserves pretty much capture, it's basically saying you don't, any cost to transport gas from the North Slope will be disallowed. I think you've got the third clause already covered by that. If someone could explain to me what the specific concern was, perhaps that second clause could be amplified by simply adding regardless of destination. Then that way you pick up saying, look, we're just not going to let this get used to move gas off of the North Slope, period. And then I think that's cleaner, because then it's clear you're not talking about an in-state bullet line, a line to tidewater such as would be done for Valdez, or a line that goes on to Canada. So you've essentially disallowed all destinations from the North Slope by simply adding to this end of the second clause, regardless of destination.
Marcia, would you identify where you're talking about specifically in the bill?
Yes, on page 3 of the CS, line 22, mm-hmm. Toward the end of that paragraph, just before the underlined new language is inserted, you could simply insert alternative new language that said, comma, regardless of its destination, or the gas, the destination of the gas.
And then strike the or for the delivery of North Slope gas?
Exactly. And then that way it's very clear that you're not covering any cost to transport gas from North Slope reserves to any destination.
Yeah, and I think that's the intent of why they put that in there, so we can mm-hmm. certainly entertain that, and I think that's probably a sound recommendation. Representative Seaton.
I think we have the wording. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any additional questions of anyone either online at this point or Perry Lockhart?
Oh.
Representative Seaton.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Is that Mr. Tuck, Chris Tuck?
Yep, the distant one.
Would you?
I have a couple of questions for Marathon.
That's fortunate we have them here.
Okay, if you don't mind, anyone can answer from Marathon, whether it's Nicole or if it's Terry, but can you tell me, does Marathon Oil have operations in Oklahoma currently?
Representative Tech through the chair. This is Carrie. Yes, we do have operations in Oklahoma.
And can you give us an idea how much of your operations, percentage-wise, of Marathon Oil is in Alaska versus the lower 48?
Representative Tucker, the chair, are you referencing production?
Probably more for exploration, since this bill is trying to get more exploration going.
Over the past several years, we have had very little exploration, true, what we would call true exploration in Alaska versus elsewhere.
And so you've had a lot of true exploration, as you just mentioned the term, going on actively down the lower 48?
Representative Tuck, to the chair, that is correct.
And can you kind of let us know what areas of the lower 48 that you have that true exploration going?
Representative Tech through the chair, yes, we have exploration in a lot of our different assets. You know, we are in the shale plays. We're very active in Gulf of Mexico. We do have activity going on in the Oklahoma area. I don't know the exact numbers in any one of those regions, but I do know that we are actively exploring and developing.
So if this bill gets passed as is currently, I know you said that it will make it more of a level playing field. We expect to see exploration that would be preferenced in Alaska versus your other exploration areas?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, this is both an exploration and a development. On the development side, it will enable projects that are borderline. On the exploration side, I would have to take proposals forward to the corporate, which we have yet to do currently with our current portfolio. We'd have to take that based on the new numbers and just do a comparison. We do that on an annual basis, so it would be part of the normal planning process. Once we go through the planning process in comparison at the corporate level on the economics of these projects and the feasibility of these projects, decisions will be made. And I can't state here that, again, it would drive wild exploration for Marathon and Cook Inlet. But I think it will help projects compete.
Okay, because you did make a statement earlier that it would make a more level playing field. I just wanted to make sure that was the case.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. Representative Seaton, did I get to you?
Well, I wasn't sure. You said for either Marathon or People Online.
Any questions we have right now? We're going to move to public testimony here in just a second.
Yes, I did have a couple. One is that, and maybe they're going to get back to us, but I just wanted to make sure because I don't see anything in this bill that says that the expenses written off against this corporate income tax, 25%, can't also be used to write off against the 40% exploration tax credit in Cook Inlet or any other tax credits there. So if they haven't reviewed that enough yet, I just want to make sure that they get back to us on that.
If I may?
And who are we speaking with?
Yes, this is Robin Wilson, if I might.
Thank you, Robin. Go ahead.
To speak.
Address that.
Can you speak up or move a little closer to the mic?
I'm sorry, is that better?
That's much better. Thank you.
Okay. In the current statute, I'm looking at 4320043G. It says a taxpayer who obtains a credit under this section may not claim a tax credit or royalty modification provided for under any other title. And we would interpret that to mean that the expenditures, the subject of which is this credit, the same expenditures can't be used then for any other sort of tax credit, i.e. under Chapter 55 production tax or the royalty modification. I believe that answers the representative's question.
hope that's helpful there.
We will find out. Representative Seaton.
It does, and I would like, when people testify, to find out, you know, if we're talking about drilling wells and exploration, if the tax credit at 25% of corporate income tax is less than drilling a well, the current tax credit for exploration and development, drilling wells in Cook Inlet, if it's less, why would anybody apply for the tax credit under the corporate income tax and forego a greater tax credit percentage that's available under other provisions? So I just want to throw that out when we go to public testimony, if somebody could tell me that. And Mr. Chairman, can I?
Representative Seaton.
And I think it's for DNR, I guess I'm just want to check and find out. We've had testimony that this only relates to exploration and development or drilling wells. And I'm unsure, I really don't see the qualified services definition. And can you get those definitions to us so we can understand whether those are on, with, since now with ongoing production fields as well as others, so that we can see the definition of how this is related to drilling new wells and not something else.
Mr. Banks, did you hear that?
No, I didn't, Mr. Chairman. Could please repeat the question, Representative Seaton?
I'm not sure it was a question as much as a statement, but stay tuned. Representative Seaton.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I'm wanting to do is get the information from DNR that they view this as only applying to new well development and exploration and not ongoing work within an existing field. I mean, I think we've had testimony both ways, and I want to find out how DNR is reading this.
Representative Seaton, this is Marcia Davis, and since this is a language that's contained in our corporate income tax code, I think what I could offer would be that DOR will work with Kevin Banks, who obviously is the repository of the detailed knowledge of sort of the oil and gas in the field, how things get done, and we'll work together to give you an idea of how we see ourselves interpreting the qualified expenditures for the services side as well as for the capital side. I think one of our issues to walk through is the change from the original version A to the CS is significant in that in the former bill it only covered those types of expenditures associated with a gas reservoir that up to that point had not yet produced gas. And therefore, those were pretty clear-cut cases, and it was pretty clear that any expenditure that's going to be incurred there is not going to be an operating expense until there's production. By virtue of the change to the CS, which now basically allows a gas well to be drilled in an existing reservoir, tapping gas reserves, it will be a finer distinction we have to make within the division of revenue to make sure that the labor services in the expenses being charged against that new well are not actually associated with the adjacent wells and their ongoing operating expenses. So by virtue of the change, it's just that we have to be a little more careful in distinguishing which costs can be deducted and ensuring that they aren't part and parcel of the adjacent or nearby operating expenses.
Marcia, I encourage you to put your head together quickly.
Okay.
We will probably set this aside, but at our earliest convenience, we're going to want to hear this and move it forward. So sooner than later, in terms of getting these answers to the committee.
Right. Chairman Johnson, I'm not sure that anything that we would be able to say would necessarily require language differences, because I think the language here is really all about what is an operating expense and just our ability to distinguish that. So. We'll look at that and see if we would need any additional guidance from the legislature in assisting Department of Revenue in interpreting what the scope of the operating expense exclusion is.
And I appreciate that, but I would like for you to try to elevate Representative Seaton's comfort level in that, and so that we can move this as rapidly as if it does make sense for us to move it as quickly as possible. Representative Gutman?
Understood.
Thank you. Marcia, this is for you, something you just said. Just my understanding of the original bill in 03, 61, dealt with new gas, new oil or gas. Is it your impression that if let's just say Marathon, because they're here, put a well into an existing field and didn't change the production level, or maybe defining it as stopping decline, would be eligible, or does it have to be new gas?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, in terms of the language that is currently in the CS, I believe the sole criteria that we would use is that it produces development of any gas reserve, regardless of whether there's commercial production in the area, and regardless of what its outcome is, as a successful or unsuccessful well. So, in terms of, there's no requirement as to it increasing overall production, or that it, stem decline or anything. It's simply a well that taps into gas reserve, period.
Thank you. Okay. Before we go, the sponsor staff has to go up to another meeting, so are there any questions for the sponsor at this point? Okay, thanks, Tom. Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Marcia Davis, Representative Newman. In regards to page 3, lines 22 or 23, where it talks about the 68 degree north latitude designation. I have to notice that goes right through the middle of Red Dog Mine and some other areas that are currently being explored around the state. And I know that they're looking for ways to try and reduce their operating expenditures by trying to find different gas pockets. So if they're, and because that's particularly right at that 68 degree latitude, they could possibly be finding gas south of that. So if we've got, or regardless of destination, if you could work with me on that one and try and make it so that we can have opportunities for exploration and resource development in the state to happen. That happens to be a lot of that area too that I believe Doyon is currently exploring for different gas pockets around the state to provide electricity for generation in some of the villages around the state. So if we could work on that to make sure that we don't interfere with that, because I believe the intent for the sponsor is just to not have a pipeline down to South Central or an in-state pipeline or to Canada that's covered by this.
Understood, Representative Newman, through the chair. Yes, we should be able to come up with a descriptor or something that would give us a geographic zone around that area that up to now has no gas exploration to make it clear that that would not be part of the excluded area.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any additional questions for anyone online or otherwise? With that, we're going to go to public testimony. Is there anyone online who'd like to testify? And I do not see any. Is there anyone in the audience that'd like to testify? I do not see any. I'm not inclined to close public testimony in the light of not having anyone come forward. I think that would be ill-advised. We want to give everyone an opportunity to weigh in on this. For Marcia and Kevin and possibly Robin, we are going to bring this up as quickly as we can. I would hate to move on this only to find you had a problem later, so I would encourage you once again to put your heads together quickly. So with that, is there anything else on this bill? Any questions on this particular piece of legislation? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess the question is on page 4 under property. And I was just wanting to have DNR and revenue, I guess, when they address us, that this property has a lot of breadth as far as power plants and topping plants and processing plants and compressor stations and whether it would be LNG compressors for exporting gas or port facilities and all of these things, and I just need to get a comfort level as to how expansive this write-off of potentially 100% of corporate income tax could be on these issues if it involves gas, but not maybe 100% of gas. If there's any gas at all that goes through a port facility or power stations in any of these things, does that then all qualify for this 25% credit of all the expenses and on corporate income tax? And they can get back to us in writing.
And I appreciate that. Marcia, and since you've had the most to say today, I'm going to task you with being lead on this.
That'd be fine, Chairman Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Seaton. And we want to make sure that we enact good policy and that we do the right thing, but we also understand that time is of the essence. So with that, is there anything else to come before the committee at this point? With that, we are going to recess to a call of the chair, and I anticipate that being 5:30, at which time we will take up Representative Hawker's Cook Inlet storage bill. So with that, we are recessed, and we'll see y'all back here this evening. And the lounge will stay open late. So recess. Resources Committee is reconvened. President, Representative Edgman, Seaton, Wilson, what's your name? Olson and Johnson. We have some illnesses, and it's certainly not from our last meeting. Representative Bettenberg and the co-chair are not available today.
Yeah.
Before us, we have House Bill number 280. We have the sponsor and most capable staff. And with that, Representative Hawker. So everyone knows, we have Larry Ostrowski with DNR, Robin Wilson with the Tax Division online for questions.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is a true pleasure to be back before your committee. And Mr. Chairman, if I might, for your record-keeping purposes, I am Representative Mike Hawker. I represent District 32 in the South Central Alaska region. And Mr. Chair, if I might have a indulgence of the committee to respond to two questions that were offered in our previous session.
Okay, if you'll state the questions and the answers, because we've slept since we ate.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
We met.
You see, Representative Guttenberg had raised the questions we did not answer about what would trigger the recovery of tax credits for storage, where the bill currently provides specifics parameters, and largely gets to if the facility stops being used for cycling gas for the purposes of consumer consumption. And Representative Guttenberg brought up the hypothetically, well, what if that, for whatever reason, that lack of gas cycling was beyond the control of the owner of the facility? And we've talked about it, and my team has thought about this, and quite frankly, we've got a relatively low threshold for maintenance of commercial operations with the flow requiring a 100 million cubic feet per year cycle through. That's pretty small when you start thinking that even on a peak day in the winter you can use 400 million cubic feet. So we really did not want to, at this time we were asking the committee to say, I think we have an adequate protection here, and that if something happens that would interrupt that level of flow, we've either got a much bigger problem on our hands than recovering the taxes or otherwise. So I think we're adequately protected there. And the other question Representative Tuck had asked, and it was kind of, well, how does this gas storage business have to do with or interrelate with whether we do or do not see the export facility at Nikiski continue its operations? And I've got to be honest with you, I was not on my best game when I responded, and there's a very simple answer, and that is if the export plant is discontinued, we're going to need an awful lot of storage to meet peak demands. If the export facility continues, due to the lower and lesser overall production volume, we're just going to need lesser amounts of storage. Either way, we're going to need storage.
Okay. Any questions of the sponsor before we move to public testimony? Thank you, Representative Hawker. You may stay there or go sit in a more comfortable chair or whatever your heart desires. So we will open public testimony. We will go to Stacy Schubert in Anchorage. Are you there, Stacy? Stacy?
I'm here.
And I have on my list that I don't know if it's supposed to mean you're with Mayor Sullivan or Mayor Sullivan is there.
I am testifying on behalf of Mayor Sullivan.
Okay, if you'd state your name for the record and your position, and begin your testimony, please.
Absolutely. Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Johnson and members of the House Resources Committee. My name is Stacy Schubert. I'm Intergovernmental Affairs Director for Mayor Sullivan in Anchorage. I am testifying today at the request of Mayor Sullivan. The municipality of Anchorage is concerned about the declining production of natural gas in the Cook Inlet, specifically as it relates to decreased deliverability through the gas system. Exploration in Cook Inlet is declining, which has prompted concern among the administration and others in the community. Rail Belt Utilities have been working with us on the Energy Watch program, the green, yellow, and red system that implores customers to adjust their behavior in the event of an impending energy crisis. Last winter, we nearly experienced a catastrophic event. This year, we have been stable, but we cannot rely on the stability of the past to guide our future. The timeline for action is growing shorter. As a result, I am testifying in support of the concepts proposed in the CS version of House Bill 280 to encourage gas storage and exploration in the Cook Inlet, and therefore stability for Rail Belt energy consumers. Specific features of the bill supported by the mayor are the strong requirement that financial benefits flow through the utilities that contract for gas to the benefit of their customers, the provision for a 40% credit for exploration expenses in Cook Inlet against production taxes that we hope will result in increased exploration, and the direction to the Department of Law to consider the impact to consumers in the event the RCA rejects the utility's gas supply contract. We concur with the bill sponsors that this encourages the RCA to take a long-term view and provides a long-term benefit to consumers. The mayor is committed to monitoring the bill as it continues to work its way through the legislative process, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify tonight.
Thank you, Stacy. And are there any questions for Ms. Schubert? Thank you very much. Next up, we have Stuart Goring with the Alaska Regulatory Commission. And I also see that you have Chairman Pickett there with you. Will that be... Will you be testifying separately?
Actually, we're available here for questions at this point, but did not plan to present testimony directly on the bill other than in response to questions.
Okay, thank
both
you.
Both of us are available independently if you have questions for either one of us.
Okay, and I will change that from a testify to questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Do we have anyone else online? Okay. Carrie? Not, you don't want to testify? You just don't like us anymore, do you? She spent all day with us, all afternoon with us, so thank you.
Just talked out.
Yeah, is there anyone else in the room who'd like to testify? Well, that was easy. With that, we will close public testimony. That brings the bill before us. And I do want to recognize that Representative Tuck is online. Committee discussion. Any Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for the RCA, if that's possible.
It is possible. We have Stuart Goring and Chairman Pickett, Bob Pickett, online.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the bill we have before us is directing you to make regulations. I know that there was a previous assignment that you weren't regulating that. I think I remember that that was based on that you didn't have statutory authority. Will this bill give you the appropriate statutory authority to be able to regulate gas storage in the Cook Inlet Basin?
Draw straws, gentlemen.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, this is Stuart Goring. I'm the Assistant Attorney General who represents the RCA, and I did not hear the representative who was asking the question, but I will address his question. As I understand it, the question is, does this committee substitute contain sufficient language to clarify the RCA's jurisdiction over natural gas storage? And the answer to that is yes. The legislation that's before you does address all of the concerns that the commission raised in its recent decision, and does clarify really both the commission's jurisdiction over over third-party natural gas storage, as well as clarify the lack of jurisdiction over what has been termed in many places proprietary storage, that is to say the storage that already exists that is owned and operated by natural gas producers for their own benefit and to assure that they can meet their contractual obligations under their gas supply agreements with the utilities. So it does both of those things, we believe, to the extent that it would be necessary at this time.
Follow-up, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the further question was on Section 20, and that was on the direction to the RCA to consider failure to approve a contract. Does that direction fully just, Mr. Chairman, can we wait just a minute to make sure that I'm not on an old version or something?
I think you're right.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Page 16, line 24, section 20.
If Mr. Chairman.
Section C.
Yeah, if I might.
Representative Hawker.
The section 20 relates to RAPA, which we're applying the same requirements to or guidance to as we do with RCA. The RCA language is specifically in Section 5.
Oh, thank you, Mr.
Always happy to help, sir.
Did you hear that clarification to the question about Section 5?
Yes, we did. Thank you. And Representative Seaton, through the chair, this is Stuart Gehring again responding, and I will note that the that this does authorize, or I should say require, the commission to consider certain things, which I will say that based on an assessment of past commission orders have already been at the forefront of the commission's consideration, but it will certainly help the commission's consideration in the sense that it will allow parties to specifically address those criteria when making their presentations, either in favor of or perhaps in opposition to approval of a gas sales agreement that might come before the commission in the future. And so it won't really result in the commission considering anything new, but it will draw to the party's attention the need to address those in their presentations to the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Also online, we have Larry Ostrowski with DNR and Robin Wilson of the Tax Division. And I had in my notes we were going to have Stuart Goring with Law. Is he not online? Those members are online for questions as well. Any additional questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And I believe this is going to be for Ms. Robin.
With the Tax Division.
With the Tax Division. And that is on page 14, subsection 1, starting on line 20, where it says, notwithstanding that a Cook Inlet well lease expenditure may be deductible lease expenditure for calculating the production tax, unless a credit for that expenditure is taken under these others, a producer or explorer that incurs a well lease expenditure may also elect to apply a tax credit against 011E in the amount of 40% of that expenditure. I'm trying to read that and understand what the different ones are. Could you lead us through that and whether we're having the same expenditure deducted against either corporate tax or this 40% tax credit, or what the interaction is with this new language?
Yes, for the record, this is Robin Wilson with the Tax Division. Representative Seaton through the chair. Reading this, for example, 4320043 is the gas development credit. And so what this paragraph is, my reading of this paragraph is that the taxpayer can take a credit under 4355, but not 4320043. Now, this section that you've cited is Chapter 55, which is not quite my bailiwick right now. I apologize. I don't know if Larry Ostrowski's on the line, if you've got a different reading of this, Larry.
No, I don't, Robin.
And that was Larry Ostrowski with DNR.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, sorry for butting in.
That's okay. We just try to keep everything straight so we know who's saying what to who. Representative Hawker?
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Wilson, who I greatly valued her assistance in the development of this bill, stated what she stated was absolutely, I believe, 100% correct. I'm not really so sure that it provided a sort of contextual response to the question that Rep. Seaton might have been looking for. And with your permission, could I ask my staff, Larry Persley, to come forward and give a contextual response?
Certainly.
For the record, I'm Larry Persley, staff aide to Representative Hawker. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, Section 16 takes the existing 30 or 40% exploration credit that's currently in statute, and for Cook Inlet, it will just go to a 40% credit. And it expands what the allowable expense is for that credit to include all well-related lease expenditures. So it does broaden the definition and go to a straight 40% instead of just 30 or 40, depending on distance from an existing hole in the ground.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And what I'm trying to figure out is that it says it may also elect to apply the tax credit against 0111E. And so I'm trying to figure out what multiples we are allowing this tax, if we are allowing multiples of this lease expenditure to count as credits in multiple sections of the law.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, no, you can only take it once, depending where you might have a tax liability, but you can only take it once. We're not going to let someone count a credit twice.
Okay, and
Representative Seaton,
can I get that language explained to me, why we have it that, you know, on line 23, a producer or explorer that incurs Cook Inlet well lease expense may also elect to apply a tax credit against the tax levied under 5501E.
We know we're in trouble. He's grabbing statute books.
Well, through the chair, I don't have all the numbers memorized as well as I should. How's that?
And we don't have them reproduced in our bill here, and that's where I'm getting confused as well.
Thank you. Well, 4355011 is the oil and gas production tax. And while I look these up, maybe I could ask Ms. Wilson if she knows what I'm looking for.
Yes, please, if I could. This is Robin Wilson again. And looking at this again, it, as I recall, and again, it's been a while since I was looking directly at the production tax rules, but under the revision of that section, you know, as it was revised in 06 and then I believe continued on into 07 and so on, that even the credit could be given even though it was the expenditure was deductible in calculating the production tax value. I'm sorry, does that answer your question, Representative Seaton?
And actually, if I might, Mr. Chair, I think even we've got way too many brains working on this, and there's an easy answer.
Representative Hawk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Representative Seaton. If I'm trying to identify exactly the root of the question, and if I am correct in that your question really got to, you know, are we allowing double dipping for the credit to be same credit to be applied against two different taxes? The answer is no. because we have to look at the prefacing language in that sentence, because where it talks about unless a credit for that, this is on line 22, for that expenditure is taken under someplace else, it's basically then you may also elect to apply it against the production tax. So, you know, we've got a unless you take it here, then you can take it here situation.
Representative Seaton?
If our tax lawyers are going to tell us that that's what may also elect to apply a tax credit against this one means I'll be fine.
Ms. Wilson, you're on the hook here.
Yes, this is Robin Wilson again, and as Representative Hawker just explained, a person cannot take two different credits for the same expenditure. They can, however, take a deduction for the expenditure in addition to a credit. And the value of a deduction generally is a lot less than the value of a credit. So although that this section talks about it may take a deduction and a credit, it also says that it cannot take the same it cannot get two different credits for the same expenditure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I might again.
Representative Hawker.
As as the committee process often identifies, concerns that may have been overlooked by the technical folks working on this with us, simultaneously, all four of the folks on my team here sent a note to each other that said if there was any concern with the word also, it could be deleted here if that would make the committee more comfortable with this provision.
Representative Seaton, would that help your comfort level?
It would, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
If I might make a conceptual amendment.
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we strike on page 14, line 24, the word also.
So would read producer or explorer that incurs cook inlet tax well expenditures may elect to apply a tax credit against the tax levied.
That's correct.
Are you clear with that?
We're trying to find out which number, what amendment it would
okay.
be.
Good luck. You know what amendment this would be? This is going to be amendment number.
We don't.
I was going to say one. I don't think we've amended this one.
Yet.
Okay, so this would be amendment number one conceptually. I guess it's not conceptual. We're just going to delete this word. So amendment number one is to delete the word also on line 24, page 14. Are there any objections? Hearing none, amendment number one passes. Thank you, Representative Seaton.
Thank you.
Representative, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just so I understand this, from the lines from 20 to 27 on page 14, all that says is that you may deduct something and you also may elect to apply it as a tax credit against in the amount of 40% of that expenditure. Is that what that says, basically?
Rep. Wilson, through the chair, Representative Johnson. Yes, that is what it says, and I would note that this is language that is parroted language and the methodology that was established in the PPT and ACES debates in the legislature previously. What we're doing by this adding new subsections, we're not creating any new concepts, we're not creating any new credits, but we had set aside a separate section of statute for specifically the activities within the Cook Inlet. But yes, this is where we had the both deductibility and credits allowed for these expenditures.
Representative Wilson, follow up?
Robin, can you tell me, give me an example, if they took a deduction what are the possibilities here? Like if there was $10,000 cost
they could deduct the cost because that was part of doing business, and then they can turn around and get a tax credit of 40% of that cost. Is that correct?
Yes, this is Robin Wilson, through the chair, Representative Wilson, that is correct.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Representative Seaton.
And Ms. Wilson, under 4320043, would there currently be also a 10% deduction or credit on the corporate income tax on that as well?
Yes, this is Robin Wilson again, Representative Seaton to the chair. No, that would not be a duplicative credit. And if you hold, for just a moment, let me get the exact language from the statute. I'm looking at 4320043, and that is subsection G. That's the gas exploration and development tax credit that's creditable against the corporate income tax. The language in subsection G states a taxpayer who obtains a credit under this section may not claim a tax credit or royalty modification provided for under any other title. And so our reading of that is that precludes the same expenses that would generate the credit under 4320043 cannot be then used for another credit under the production tax or any other section, any other chapter within the title.
Representative Seaton.
Okay, and thank you for that. And a corollary to that, can you receive the 40% credit here and still be, could you still get royalty modification as well?
My reading of 4320043G is that there would not be a credit against royalties, but royalties are not my area, so I would defer to DNR on that one.
Larry, are you available, or did you hear the question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. While I'm not an expert in this particular question, I would note that the statute says a tax, and this is 4320043G, says a taxpayer who obtains a credit under this section may not claim a tax credit or royalty modification provided for under any other title.
Representative Seaton?
Wasn't that the corporate tax that we were looking at? No. So we've taken care of that. Now we're looking at the tax credit under, where are we? Under this bill. Trying to find the, under this bill, 280, that would be a tax credit under 4355011E. And whether you could take a tax credit under the 40% tax credit under 4355011E and still get royalty modification.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that's frankly a question we'll just have to get back to you on.
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hawker.
Certainly and again, verifying with my folks that helped put this together. I think the question I thought I heard here was whether the credits under Section 16, if someone availed themselves of them, that it the question is, would it prevent a taxpayer from pursuing and receiving a royalty modification or the royalty modification statutes? And I can say that it is certainly, as this was crafted by my office and my people, I think you heard it was the other reference that talked about the, if you take a deduction under this section, you can't pursue royalty modifications, but there's nothing in Section 16 that would preclude a taxpayer from pursuing royalty modification under the royalty modification statutes.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, and I just ask the sponsor whether that's the intention that there should be the 40% tax credit and the write off those expenses against production tax, as well as royalty modification, that all of those things would be available under 280.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, again, in that, frankly, we did not contemplate the, looking at enhancing royalty modification statutes by any means, but it is certainly, my position on this. Royalty modification requirements are set a very, very, it's a very, very high bar in order to receive royalty modification in the state here. And for a taxpayer to pursue royalty modification, the credits available to them under Section 16 of this bill, and all other economic elements of the state fiscal regime would go into that that discussion in having to justify a royalty modification application. So again, I believe we're again saying that yes, royalty modification is still an application for royalty modification is certainly still accessible to a taxpayer who has availed themselves under deductions and credits under Section 16. But in making that decision, the state would of course consider the deductions and credits that were available to that same taxpayer under Section 16.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, can I just ask the DNR folks as to whether when royalty applications are made, would this 40% tax credit be one of the things that would be available for consideration in their decisions on whether to grant royalty modification?
Larry, are you able to answer that?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, yes, I believe we take in all tax credits into account when we consider royalty modification.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Any other questions of the committee, for the sponsor, or anyone online? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I discussed with the sponsor earlier and would like to just get a discussion on the record of Section 11 and the relationship of how the tax credit generated here from activity in Cook Inlet, where we have have ring-fenced and have a very low tax rate, and this is going to allow those to be applied without the deduction of considering that very low tax rate to the higher tax rate production taxes across the state. And so, Mr. Chairman, if I could ask for the sponsor to be able to have that discussion with us.
You may. Representative Walker.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Seaton. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I appreciate the opportunity to further have this conversation, as it is potentially the most significant change in tax regime components in the legislation here as it relates to working to achieve our desire to make Cook Inlet an attractive and, frankly, to maximize its attractiveness for capital investment next in the exploration arena. When the PPT ACES structure was passed, it was really focused primarily on North Slope activities, and it was realized, in having been here for all of those lengthy, excruciating debates, it was realized somewhat late in the debate that if we were to apply the PPT ACES structure on a statewide basis, which is how it was originally drafted and considered in the legislature, that it would result in a very significant increase in taxes in the Cook Inlet, just as it did on the North Slope. Two bills passed back to back, both of them representing essentially the greatest tax increases in the oil industry in the state's history. Well, it was recognized late in the debate that if we impose those, industry doesn't pay taxes, consumers pay taxes. And it was recognized that if those taxes were applied to the Cook Inlet, those tax increases, that frankly, there's no industry that would pay them, but it would be paid by the consumers through the regulated utility pricing or regulated energy pricing process, where those taxes would be recognized as legitimate expenses incurred in the supply chain of natural gas to consumers in South Central. So as in recognition that that was an undesirable outcome, and that was massive tax, massive increases in consumer energy prices in South Central Alaska. South Central Alaska, the Cook Inlet production was essentially ring-fenced, and said the bills provided that the tax structure in the Cook Inlet would remain as it was. The rate paid by producers would be essentially the old ELF regime. And then just as a sidebar, other legislation has extended that treatment to other in-state locations where gas is produced and consumed in-state. The PPT ACES debates were truly focused on the North Slope. At the time, it was recognized that some producers working in both the North Slope and in the Cook Inlet, and that if they spent a dollar in the Cook Inlet, that was not needed to offset the taxes, which were kept very, very low. There was a policy call made, and that policy call was that they shall not be allowed to use a credit generated in the Cook Inlet on the North Slope or any place else in the state. Credits are substantial and significant and have been a very important part of certainly the intent by many to make the state as attractive to new investment as possible. As in coming forward with this bill, started looking and realizing that what we're effectively doing is we're disadvantaging the Cook Inlet by having the credits generated from exploration and development there not be available elsewhere in the state. And that we do have a fairly low tax system. The investment of a dollar in the Cook Inlet, just mathematically right now, I was going to call it kind of the mathematical purity of the existing tax system, is going to result in a lesser benefit to the investor than investing the same dollar elsewhere in the state, particularly on the North Slope. So by offering the change here that says investment in the state of Alaska is investment. Investment is investment. Investment is good. And we don't want to disadvantage the Cook Inlet as an attractive investment climate. We are allowing, with this change, the investor the ability to take those credits deductions anywhere they may be operating in the state, even though it was incurred in the Cook Inlet with a lesser tax structure. The outcome of this should be that to further enhance and, in my own choice of words, to maximize the attractiveness and maximize the competitiveness of the Cook Inlet, literally within the borders of the state of Alaska. As you know, so much of our conversation has to do with maximizing Alaska's competitiveness in the global marketplace. This provision is there, no apologies for it, but it is to absolutely maximize and promote the ability of prospects in the Cook Inlet to be competitive and attracting investment capital to develop those the gas that most everyone hopes is there, the DNR suggests might be there, AOGCC says there's a good possibility it's there, but unless it's going to be expensive to reach, it's these smaller stratigraphic traps. So I really believe this provision gives us the greatest possible opportunity to attract the capital necessary to reach those reserves that are going to be a critical part of meeting South Central's energy security. And again, that's a multi-tiered approach. It involves both providing storage and buffer capacity, as well as we absolutely have to improve the production in the Cook Inlet to the best of our abilities.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think that we need to, and the public needs to realize that we keep ring fencing areas and putting in either zero, like oil, zero, or low tax rates, or effectively zero, or extremely low tax rates. And what we're doing is essentially by doing that is giving 100% tax credit. In other words, whatever you do, you don't have to offset against the tax because we've already given you 100% of that because we're not charging any tax at all. And then when we take and allow those expenses to be to offset areas that have a high tax. We've not only said, okay, you get almost no tax where you're developing it, but now we're going to give you high tax credits and let you apply them against areas production where there is a high tax rate, so that you get additional state participation with those that reduction. And so I think that we found that, you know, having a gross tax and keeping it very low, or even an interaction of gross and net where it's ring fenced and very low, you know, it has not yielded the exploration incentives that we've desired. And I don't think there's any question that that's the case. And that's one of the reasons why we don't have this. And now we're going to a 40% tax credit on investments on top of these extremely low tax rates to try to get that incentive. So I guess the discussion, you know, the reason I'm bringing this up, Mr. Chairman, is because we have not only this, but we have a number of initiatives that are saying, let's give big tax breaks on gas or oil or something if it's in a certain place. And every time we do that, we kind of get to this situation where we're changing the entire theory of unified tax that we went before, and we were saying we're going to be taxing the profits made across the entire state. And I think that when we do this, we're going to significantly advantage some companies that have operations in both Cook Inlet and the North Slope, a low tax area and a high tax area, whereas those that are concentrating in the low tax area are not going to gain the benefit of being able to write these tax credits off against the high tax rates in other parts. So I just wanted to bring this up, Mr. Chairman, so we were all fully aware of what we're doing. I don't know if there's any thing we can do, because we are trying to incentivize Cook Inlet production, but we should recognize that we may be advantaging certain folks that are going to be able to use those credits to offset high tax investment on the North Slope, or other people that don't have those investments are going to not see that advantage. And so again, when we get into these situations where we're making these special rules for different subsidiary areas, we're having some impacts that we may not be fully recognizing without a lot of public testimony. So thank you.
Representative Hawker.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative Seaton. And we're coming forward with this legislation. We recognized the challenge that you've identified here, and that is certainly our desire not to have a tax structure that is prejudiced against any individual producer or explorer in a region, investor. Actually, I prefer the word investor in a region, you know, one over the other. And in the aggregate, the way that is resolved here is, if folks will remember, the small producer credits are refundable. And so we've got a situation where if someone is operating just in the Cook Inlet and is unable to avail themselves of the full use of the credits, those credits are, in fact, refundable. So it has equalized the opportunity for all investors in the Cook Inlet. And it is specifically intended not to prejudice the state's fiscal regime against one investor or another.
Thank you, Representative Hawker. Any any other questions? Hearing and seeing none, what would be the will of the committee?
We entertain a motion.
I would entertain a motion. I would love to be entertained.
Make sure I get the right version.
See.
Make a motion to move the CS for House Bill 280. 26-LS 1185-C with as amended with attached fiscal notes out of committee.
Are there objections? Hearing and seeing none, HB 280 goes about its merry way. Is there any other discussions to come before the committee at this time? Hearing and seeing none, we will adjourn.
Thank you all.